How are the other man's attitudes about being there?
I don't really tell you about the other men's attitudes. I've seen a lot of men cry. I've seen a lot of men break down and not be able to handle the stress. I've even seen 3 suicide attempts while I was at basic training of people that could not handle the stress. It is very stressful. They tell you that when you join. It's not going to be a cakewalk. It's a very stressful job joining the military and being able to handle the stress and the affliction that they have put upon you to endure. I looked at it this way. My mother told me, don't ever volunteer for nothing, number one. And number two, look at it this way. There's 80 of you going through the same stuff all together. So look at it that way, that you're not the only one that's getting picked on. There's 80 of you going through it together. You're a team. And if all 80 of you can make it, then you've accomplished something. And I can put it to you this way. We didn't make it with 80. We began with 85 people. And we ended up graduating 52. So we lost a lot of people through attrition, throughout our time in basic training. We lost people and we gained some people that had medical problems that were washed back to our platoon or our company.
What did you think about the idea of going to war?
What did I think about the idea of going to war?
Mm-hmm.
I always knew there was going to be a chance that I would be involved in some kind of conflict while I was in the military. If I wasn't worried about, you know, war, then why join the military? I mean, because I know sooner or later there was going to be a chance that I would be involved in some type of conflict throughout my time in the military. So it doesn't really bother me that I had to go to a war. And if I have to go to a war ever again, it's not going to bother me again. I'll go wherever the United States needs me to go, and I'll do my best to protect my country and my country's interests.
Did it have any effect on your family at all?
Yes, it had a lot of effect on my family. My mother, it hit her pretty hard because I didn't have that much notice when I left. I had 4 hours notice, and luckily I had seen my mother the weekend before, so at least it wasn't like a last goodbye, so I was able to give her a phone call on the day that I was supposed to leave. My fiance, it hit her real hard, because we were supposed to get married on December 22nd. I left for the Gulf War on August the 3rd, a day after the invasion, which was on August the 2nd by the Iraqi troops into Kuwait, and so it wasn't like I had a lot of time to make plans on what to do with my car and how my bills were going to get paid and family matters and stuff like that. So it was basically like I grabbed my stuff and I ran.
Mm-hmm.
And if it wasn't for my mother, she took care of a lot of things. She made sure my bills got paid and took care of my car and I was gone to the Gulf War.
How did you get to Desert Storm when picked to go?
Okay, the way I got to Desert Storm was by ship. Like I said before, I left on August the 3rd. We took a convoy of Humvees, which is high mobility vehicles, the Marine Corps, which a lot of people in the civilian world calls them Hummers. We took those and drove them from Jacksonville, North Carolina to Morehead City, North Carolina, which is a Fort Head for the Marine Corps. Going to Morehead City with our Hummers, along the way we got pulled over. It was unbelievable. We got pulled over and got a ticket for not having our license with us. I was thinking, you know, why have my driver's license with me when I go into a war? There's no use, but we were given a ticket and It was taken care of by the military personnel, so I wouldn't have to worry about that ticket, paying that ticket for driving without my license. Once we were in Morehead City, we were loaded onto a ship. I was loaded onto the LSD 44, the Gunston Hall, which is stationed at a Little Creek, Virginia. It's mainly a combat troop carrier type vehicle. take little type ship. It's pretty large, approximately about 6 football field long, 7 football fields long. It's not one of the biggest ships, and it's definitely not one of the small ships. So it was a pretty big ship. We powered across the Atlantic Ocean, which was the longest time I had ever gone without seeing land. We went approximately 12 days going across the Atlantic Ocean. That's how long it takes to get across the Atlantic Ocean, going at full speed. 12 days, and all you seen was ocean, no land. And believe it or not, we've seen seagulls out in the middle of the ocean, all the way out there, and you wonder what they land on or what they do or how they live out there in the middle of the ocean. But we've seen seagulls. And I think the first time we seen land was when we seen Morocco and Spain and Portugal type area. The first big thing we'd seen, that which was like the 7 wonders of the world. Okay, as I say again, the first thing I seen when I crossed the Atlantic Ocean was the like 7 wonders of the world, which was the Rock of Gibraltar. Before we entered the Mediterranean Sea or the Mediterranean Ocean. So once we were into the Mediterranean, we were able to see land on both sides of us every so often, every couple of days. Italy, Morocco, Egypt. We try to stay away from Libya, which is not an ally of the United States, so we try to stay away from that country. And we sat outside the Suez Canal for a day because Suez Canal is open for 12 hours with northern bound traffic and 12 hours with southern bound traffic. And we were at the time with southern bound traffic, so we had to wait for a day to enter the Suez Canal. You had to have permission to enter Suez Canal. You just can't go in there and flow through the Suez Canal. They control it with weapons and stuff. It's controlled with force, basically. The whole way through the Suez Canal is controlled by the Egyptians on one side, which Egyptians on one side, which is heavily armed, and then you have the Israelis and the Saudis on the other side, which is heavily armed. So if for any reason that you think you can make it through the Suez Canal, go for it, because they will definitely destroy you before you can make it to the other end. Thus, it takes you a whole day to travel through the Suez Canal.
Yeah.
We went through during the day and then came out at nighttime. We've seen a lot of interesting people and a lot of interesting things while we're going through the Suez Canal. The flies over there are outrageous. I mean, they're big as a house when they bite you. You definitely believe. Then once we left the Suez Canal, we entered the Red Sea. We were doing helo ops, and we lost a jet. A jet, something went wrong with it and crashed in the Red Sea. So the pilot was saved, but the jet was a total loss. And we didn't stop. We rescued the pilot and kept on going. And on a ship, ships leak, ships catch on fire, things go bad, AC quits working. And if you're on a ship and AC quits working, you're in for it. They definitely get hot sitting out in the middle of the sun. In the ocean, it's real hot. We had ship catch on fire many times, electrical, because everything is running 24 hours a day nonstop. There's no backups and everything. It just runs 24 hours a day. So once we left the Red Sea, we stopped in a country called Oman, where it was the first time I got the taste of the Saudi type atmosphere of the people over there. Was in Oman. We made a port. We stopped in port for 7 days, where we were able to make phone calls, have pieces of the ship repaired that had gone bad. We loaded food and basically took care of the necessities that we needed for basic survival on the ship. I got a phone call, got a couple of phone calls home, matter of fact, one to my mother and one to my wife, which at the time was my fiance, which is very needed. And if you ever been on a ship before in the military, you're allowed 2 beers every 45 days. So that was one of the first times that there was served alcohol to the troops, which I took my 2 cans of alcohol and sold them for $10 a piece. So I made 20 bucks because I don't drink. But I think the best morale that we had was mail. It took us 30 days before we got our first mail call. So that's a long time going out without mail. And the first thing I asked for was the Game Boy for my mother so I'd have something to do with my time, because we had a lot of downtime on things that we weren't doing. The whole time we were going over there, our basic day was consisted of learning the language that they spoke, learning their traditions, what they can do and what we can't do, how we're going to treat them, and things such as these. It takes a lot. You can't just go to a country and kill people and take them prisoner and reap the lands. You have to learn their traditions, and when you're fighting for another country, which we were fighting for Saudi, basically, you got to go by their traditions. They don't like to see people out drunk in public. If you get caught in Saudi Arabia drunk in public, you'll definitely be arrested. Their police officers over there don't carry handguns. They carry AK-47s, big weapons. So it's a big traditional change between us and their traditions. Like I said, the police officers over there carry AK-47s, which our police officers in the United States carry shotguns and handguns. They don't ride around with one police officer in a car. They have like 4 in a car, and they ride BMWs and Mercedes. Their countries over there are very rich, and they have the resources to pay these officers big money to enforce the laws over there. The highways were just basically like the United States. Most of their cities are close to the beach. The bigger cities are close to the ocean, because that's where they get the water at. They enforce the laws a lot different than we do over there. They go with force. They're paid good. They're equipped good. And they have resources. Any country that sells petroleum like the Saudis do, and the Kuwaitis and Iraq at one time, they were able to build a good resources of protection for themselves.